Yeah, they really were. Good morning, Steve. How are you? How are you doing?
I'm good. I'm good. I'm all right. I'm delighted to have you, though, because, you know, we all, from a professional basis, rubbing elbows with Chile, but he was like straight out of Central Casting.
Yeah, that's exactly right. People said, "Is that a real name, Sherwood Chillingworth?" I said, "Just call him Chile." Now, we were, as you just said, anybody that came across Chile that were, you know, fortunate and lucky, because they saw a guy that just loved the game, loved the sport. And I mean, I remember meeting Chile before he got involved with Oaktree, going way back, you know, when he was an owner and a bettor. So he started out with the right foundation for getting into what he eventually ended up with at Oaktree. But, you know, he complained about management and certain things, and so when he finally got into his position with Oaktree, I said, "Well, you've gone to the dark side now. You can prove your worth." So he was just larger than life. You know, I talked to Rick Hammerly yesterday, and you know, you want to keep seeing the guy and we'd see him at meetings, CHRB meetings and industry meetings, and he was always there. And so, you know, life was good when Chile was around. Kind of a shock, but not unexpected at that age.
And he worked up till the day before, yeah. which you know, the kind of figures. How did your dad and Chile and Hirsch, how did they even conceive of a charity meet?
I think they, at that time, this was in the late 60s, I think their concept was, you know, pretty unique at that time. There was a gap in racing in Southern California, and they thought, well, why don't we put together a group of horsemen to run a fall meeting at Santa Anita. And Clement Hirsch and my dad and Ben Ritter and Lou Rowan, you know, some of the stalwarts in California, got together, and it was going to be a very simple design. You know, I'm probably oversimplifying it, but it was really a meeting for horsemen, run by horsemen. I've used a lot of the, if not all of the Santa Anita management that ran the other Santa Anita meets, but completely nonprofit. The money would go back to the industry, and that was their mantra. That was their mission, the Oaktree mission, going to benefit California racing and take care of the animal that makes this whole thing work. So, you know, millions of dollars were distributed through the years to very worthwhile projects in California, in addition to UC Davis funding, you know, veterinary issues and trying to just better the sport. And that's what Chile was charged with for the last, you know, until he dropped, in continuing that legacy of Oaktree. And you know, unfortunately, they had a great standing with the community, the racing community, Arcadia, and their position on the calendar with Santa Anita, and worked all of this stuff through initially with Bob Stroob. And unfortunately, we're booted. Can't give it any other name, but we're booted in about 10 years ago from Santa Anita, from the offices of Santa Anita, and Santa Anita took those dates. So Chile, for the last several years, has been working across the street from Santa Anita, across Colorado Place at the California Thoroughbred Breeders Association. They were nice enough to give him office space there, so he's been occupying that and worked until the end, and I'm sure was clipping out PPs and getting ready to play the day, whatever tracks were available up until the very end. So, you know, his gambling stories are part of, you know, the character and large personality of Sherwood Chillingworth.
And you bring up the circumstances in 2010 where it sort of came to a head after what, about a year and a half of acrimony.
Yeah, that's exactly right. That's exactly right. And it was a shame. I mean, it was something that we didn't think would ever happen. We thought it was, you know, and given the great relationship that Oak Tree had with previous Santa Anita ownership, things went smoothly, went well. It was a win-win for both entities, but it just wasn't, I don't think Frank saw it quite that same way and didn't want to have somebody else occupying space, so to speak, during or at his venue.
And the entity, you referenced the entity going back to the 60s when your dad and Clement Hirsch and Lou Rowan?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. There were a number. Hal Ramser, I can't. The original board that put this whole thing together, J.T. Jones, the names, and I don't have them in front of me. I apologize for that, but it was... It was a wonderful arrangement. You know, my father was a practicing veterinarian. I think he had the least amount of money, but I think Clement was willing to put that money up for my father. They had to put up so much money to kick the thing off, to get it rolling and be licensed and all that. So, but that's how it all started. And like I said, they had a wonderful run for a lot of years.
Well, and under the auspice of Oak Tree, four Breeders' Cup, but actually 2009 was a fifth Breeders' Cup. And so in 08 and 09, my first trip to Santa Anita ever was 93 for that spectacular cup. And right. I had about as great a visit as anybody could have. I got to go to Monty's.
Right
in Pasadena, and that alone was worth the price of admission. Now I substitute the Dalray for Monty's, with Monty's being gone, but I got to meet Chili those falls, and Santa Anita's dominant position as the as the host of the Breeders' Cup. And it was during that period too, Tom, that Breeders' Cup was negotiating for that 10-year deal that almost came about, that Satish, Satish introduced that to us on the air here with his Our Industry segment. And it was Satish that talked about going out there for 10 years, and that might have changed the whole course of things with Oak Tree, perhaps, if that deal had come about.
Right. I mean, I don't think you can find a more beautiful venue at that time of the year, and we're all looking forward to it coming up. And then Craig Fravel will be taking over, moving from Breeders' Cup and finding an office space somewhere at Santa Anita, and hopefully we'll restore things to its previous grandeur.
Well, on that topic, and you can speak for Chili certainly, and for your late father as well. These circumstances that we've endured here the last year, it just feels like a vacuum from a leadership standpoint. That if the kind of people like Chili and your dad and Strube, etc. Doc Allred is a throwback to that that type of horseman that provides a steady hand on the wheel. We could sure use them right now, Tom. I don't think that's an unfair statement.
No, I totally agree. I mean, we need to stabilize things here. Tough winter, as everybody knows, at Santa Anita. Fortunately, we had at exactly the right time we needed it. We had a very good Del Mar meet, summer meet, and we just have to keep things going. We've had, gone through with and working with the veterinarians and our trainers and owners have made some worthwhile modifications to medication, to, other programs that we've established, and things have been going well. It's unfortunate we still have this spotlight seemingly on California, and we're trying to get back to normal, but with the idea that, you know, given what we've done, and we're going to continue to do more, and, you know, you can't ignore the record that we've produced, all of us in Southern California since, you know, mid-June. So that's good news. We just hope that, you know, this follows other jurisdictions across the country, that some things are adopted that make sense for everybody. And I can't say enough about how our horsemen and, you know, especially going through the Del Mar meet, how they accepted a lot of this stuff and understand that, you know, this is that people weren't just fooling around. There weren't idle threats going on about this game ending, that, you know, we reached this period of you know, what we've been facing, that there's a reality there. And I don't think the rest of the country is immune to these things too. So real changes are taking place, and I'm encouraged by that and hope that it continues.
Well, you mentioned, you know, your long association, of course, with Del Mar, and you and David Jerkins extending support and direction and help to the racing office at Santa Anita. That it can only, you know, can only help as well. Back to Chile to round things out, Tom. The conviviality and the relationship of racetrack management to the personnel. It always struck me watching him around the building. One of those types of managers and individuals that literally knew everybody's name. And it creates a trickle down effect that, you know, if the staff feels appreciated, then the patron, it'll rub off into the patron's experience. And Chile set that kind of positive tone, and that's the thing about him that you wish you could stamp onto everybody that is involved in the operation of a racetrack.
No, you're so right, Steve. And you know, we're lucky at Del Mar. We have Joe Harper, and he and Chile are like at the top of the list in my view. And what you said about Chile is exactly right. He would walk around that plant, know everybody's name, had a smile. I mean, he loved being there, and that's what you really appreciate. That it was the love of the game, and it transferred to his, you know, his treatment of people working there, and the thousands of people that, when you consider, you know, the working staff at any of these racetracks with mutual clerks. So, and like I said, Joe Harper is another one of that same sort of ilk, that, you know, that it starts at the top and flows down, and we're going to miss Chile. And like I said, it's, you know, he was just having his presence at these meetings, you know, you felt like, well, everything's good, but, you know, it's sad, but, what a wonderful life. And I was telling somebody last night, I said, anybody that, and I don't exactly know what his drink was, bourbon and something, but it was a very complicated prepared drink that he finally just made up printed cards, so when he would order a drink,
is that right? That's great.
You gotta love him. You gotta love a guy like that. And like I said, I mean, he was. I'm afraid the handle's gonna drop. There were so many times when we would, you know, a race would be run, and see Chile say, "How'd you do?" And he'd start thumbing through his probably quarter to half inch thick paramutual deck and said, "Well, let me look. I'm not sure." Oh, there's a winner. you miss a guy like that. It's a real throwback, and we're fortunate to have had him in our lives, and God bless the guy.
Now, Tom Robbins, look forward to seeing you at Santa Anita in coming weeks, and greatly appreciate the tribute to Chili Sherwood Chillingworth, 93
is what I read. You don't know how accurate those always are, but yeah, good life, good life.
Exactly. That's the at the center of it all, and didn't and was active. I mean, what more can you ask?
Yeah, that's exactly right. Great energy.
To have gone to work the day before, Tom. Thank you.
Thank you, Steve. Appreciate it. We'll see you out at Santa Anita.
You got it, Tom Robbins, everybody, and one of the first families of California racing, the Robbins family, Doc Robbins and his sons. We'll stay right here because Jeff Siegel is listening in and standing by, and another denizen of Santa Anita, and certainly somebody that over the years you must have trolling the hallways, Jeff, your experience with Chili?
Yeah, what a great guy he was when he was with Oak Tree, and he was just always so friendly. I hadn't seen him for a while, maybe 6 months, but at the time he was in good spirits and all that. So I'm sorry to see him leave us, but my interactions with him were always very, very pleasant.
It's funny. We've had a lot of West Coast voices, starting with Jay Privman and then Hammer and Tom Robbins. And we'll come around here before Dave Grenig joins us in about 20 minutes. Jeff, coming out of last week, let's get some impressions from, I thought, another great weekend of racing at Santa Anita, punctuated by the improbable sprint championship win by Omaha Beach.
Well, he's a good horse, you know, and although I didn't think he was going to win that race, I thought he might be a tad rusty, and the way the race shaped up, I didn't know if he could get up or not, but he is, and you know, he's undefeated sprinting Omaha Beach, and it could very well be that he's just a world-class sprinter that we didn't know was, you know. I mean, he won his maiden by 9 or 10 lengths and ran 7/8 and 21 flat over a sloppy track. But because of his pedigree, being by Warfront, the Connections always thought he would be a grass horse and maybe a two-turn horse, and that's where he started his career. But you know, Warfront himself was a dirt sprinter, so maybe Omaha Beach has always wanted to be that. And from what I last heard, it seems like he's going to get his chance in the Breeders' Cup in the sprint, and then you know maybe stretch out a little bit later on down the line. But he was fantastic.
You know, and you would think, I mean, if in fact, and Mandela was with us on Monday, and Richard, you know, was with us the first time we heard him say, if I had to make the decision now, I'd lean toward the sprint. You would think that they would then target the Malibu, and if he were to win out here with those three races. To end the year, the Sprint Championship, the Breeders' Cup Sprint, and the Malibu, for those that will wait to vote until after the Malibu, what does that make him? Does it make him potentially 3-year-old champ? Does it make him potentially the Sprint champ? I mean, what do you do with a season like this, Jeff?
Well, he could probably be the Sprint champ, depending upon, you know, who he beats and how he beats them in the Breeders' Cup Sprint. And then, of course, you mentioned the Malibu, which would be the logical next start, which would then lead into the Pegasus, and then he would be retired after that because he is ticketed to go to stud in 2020. But that makes more sense. I do think that while the Breeders' Cup Classic would be enticing, it's too much. And really, when you think about it, he'll get a chance to win a race like that in the Pegasus before he goes to stud. But the main thing now is to do exactly what you just described, try to win the Breeders' Cup Sprint, win the Malibu. Maybe that makes him 3-year-old, maybe not, but it certainly would help his stud credentials. And so I think that's the conservative way of doing it, and I think that's the way they're going to go.
Other performances from the weekend that stood with you, that registered?
Well, let's see. It's hard to, I mean, I got to go think, remember who actually ran last week, because they all kind of jumbled together, but, you know, and And going back and looking at some of the races, saw some really good two-year-olds. And I think that to me is what really caught my eye last week when I think about the Champagne and Tis the Law and the Breeders' Futurity and Maxfield, two really exciting two-year-olds. And I think both of them ran like they have legitimate, goals next spring and for the Triple Crown and races and stuff. Tis the Law apparently is not coming to the Breeders' Cup. Maxfield will be. I think those are going to be interesting to see. Of course, it's going to be a contentious race. Dennis's Moment, I think he breathed real well this morning, I heard. So that's going to be good. I like that. Uni was spectacular, I thought, at Keeneland and the First Lady, and she looks like she'll have to be supplemented, but deserves a chance, I would think, in the Breeders' Cup mile. I would think that would happen. I think those are the races that really kind of caught my eye, and, the prep races are essentially done now, so, you just sit back and you start putting them all together. I also want to mention Sister Charlie. I think she's maybe the most unappreciated great older filly and mare turf filly we've seen in a while. She doesn't get much following, but man, all she does is win. So I think she's going to be hard to beat when she shows up in the Breeders' Cup filly and mare turf too.
Well, and speaking of preparations, I do want to, because it's a fairly quiet weekend at Santa Anita, but I do want to ask you about your preparations, and we touched on this a little bit last week, talking about what XBTV has to offer when it comes to tracking the workouts. But in terms of compiling information and watching full race replays, and I know for the Express Bet Wagering Guide, you're doing the mile. Talk about what you do yourself, Jeff, in advance here, because I made the point this week a couple of different times that this is not 2 days where you literally open the form on Thursday and Friday and just handicap. I don't believe in that for a minute. It's a scenario where knowing as much as you can about all the horses involved, and it's become more difficult with 14 races. It used to be that those seven races, we knew every horse. Now we don't. And so the more work you do up front, the more you'll be rewarded.
No question. And we've got a couple of weeks now to really do, the work that you described. Watch as many tapes as you can. Track the workouts. We all have a pretty good idea now who we think are the best horses in each division, at least the most of the races. Now, certainly when you're getting to the, the races like the Juvenile Turf or the Juvenile Phillies Turf and the Juvenile Turf Sprint and those kind of races, that should be heavily dominated. Well, not only heavily dominated, but we'll have a lot of Euros in there. You want to be able to do as much research as you can, which, again, is watching the tapes, reading all the notes and the whatever charts you can find from Europe, getting a feel for them, and then when they come here, you want to watch them and look at them and see how they shift, what their coat looks like, see how they're acting. Talk to as many people that you respect as you can if you have the opportunity and try to formulate an opinion. But really, at this stage right now, we're trying to find out the key contenders and, if there is a difference between, for example, I'll give you an example. The Juvenile Fillies is a very contentious race. And, in looking at that race, there's a filly that's going to be, a major player named Donna Veloci, and she worked yesterday morning. All she's done is won a maiden race, but she did it like she was an extraordinary prospect. She did it here at Santa Anita Sprinting. And, there's one that I want to really watch and see how she trains, because I want to see if she'll be able to project that sprint form around two turns. And if she can, I think she's got the highest upside. She could be a play. I don't think she'd be a very short price, but certainly there's one that I want to very much focus on, see if I can come to conclusion one way or the other on her.
Historically, Jeff, when you think back to Breeders' Cups where you've done well, what is your typical approach, and what has separated successful, cup wagering from less than successful?
Well, yeah. I mean, I know what you mean, because I've had some good days and I've had some days where I couldn't get close, you know. We all go through that, you know. One thing I do want to one thing that I'm going to lean on here, and that is the Senate in the main track is very, very deep, very slow. I honestly believe it is as safe as any track in America now that they've gotten it softened up a little bit. But you better be dead fit. And I'm going to be watching. I think it's important, if you can, to have workouts, or at least one workout over the track. And it's important for, if they do, I want to be able to watch it. I want to see who gets over it and who can handle it. It's a little, again, much different than we normally would have out here. So that's part of the equation as well, recognizing if there's a track bias, if there is, then watching the workouts. You've got to be as prepared as you can. And then sometimes you just have to be right, you know. I mean, sometimes I find myself, you know, loving a horse and having it run exactly how I think it's supposed to run, and then other times, you know, I'm just not right, you know. But the gambling is there. The prices will be there if you like a bit of a price. I'm really at this stage, you know, battling on the, for example, on the Breeders' Cup Classic. I usually have a pretty good feel at this stage, and I don't with that race. I hope I get one. I hope I get a revelation before the race, because right now I'm a little lost on the Classic, I have to admit.
What is your betting format for cups, and how much of your action is multi race? How much of it is win approach? And how does your Breeders' Cup play differ at all from your day to day play year round?
I'm mostly a rolling exotic player. I like the pick threes, the pick fours, and the pick sixes. I'm not a real big exacta or trifecta player. That's a minor part of my play. Mostly, I'm trying to pick winners. That's, when I was growing up, that's all you could do, you know. There wasn't a whole lot out of the exotics, sure. And so I kind of trained myself to try to figure out who's going to win. And there's a skill involved in playing exactas and trifectas. And I'm not saying that players shouldn't go that route, but for me, I like to find winners, and I like to find major contenders, and I like to find price horses. And if I can find in a scheme of a pick three or a pick four, if I like one or two horses that I can spread, that's basically where I've made my money, and that's pretty much what I'll be doing on Breeders' Cup Day.
That's interesting, and I do agree that maybe it was Andy Beyer who changed the course or established the course of that concept with the book Picking Winners, and just, you know, driving that home, and you know, maybe to some degree it I don't want to say could have been a disservice, but if that's your mentality and that's your mindset, well, then absolutely, you're better off focusing on the multi-race opportunities. Being able to build tickets within a race, it's a whole different strategy.
No question. And that's part of, you know, trying to figure out how to maximize your budget. I mean, what I do is, I used to do this in my pick six days where I would build a ticket. I'd put the ticket on with all the horses that I thought I wanted to use, and then I'd figure out how much it cost. And if it cost way more than I wanted to spend, it simply meant that I just didn't have a feel for the scheme, and so I probably wouldn't play. I would rather not play than cut it down and miss a horse that I originally liked but couldn't use because of budgetary concerns. So I figure out what I want to play, how much I can afford. I build my ticket. If it's there, great. If it's not, there's always tomorrow. Of course, in the Breeders' Cup, there's only one tomorrow, Friday over Saturday. But the bottom line is that's my strategy. It works for me. I feel comfortable. I enjoy playing that way, and that's how I'll attack the Breeders' Cup.
Before I ask you about some specific memorable successes, one of the things that I've stressed, Triple Crown days and Breeders' Cup, is, particularly if your budget, if you've got a fairly set budget and maybe a somewhat limited budget, that if you're a pick four player for Breeders' Cup, you're probably better off pairing back a race, play pick threes. If you're a pick three player, play doubles. And I've made that suggestion because of the inflated payouts and the degree of difficulty that, you know, rather than put yourself in a position to come away with nothing, if you focus, you know, tighten your focus, you've got a seemingly, a better chance at success. And the degree of success will still be the same. But, I mean, when you're playing pick fives and pick fours the rest of the year, and you're doing it in sequences of 8 by 7 by 9 by 6, that's a lot different than what you're going to encounter here these 2 days.
No question. That's very good advice. And there's nothing wrong with a rolling double. Those payoffs can be pretty healthy, and it's kind of a forgotten bet, at least among the people that I deal with. They want to hit the home run, and, you know, there's nothing wrong with a good ground rule double sometimes either. You know? So, again, I always feel like you got to play the card. You can't let the card play you. Don't force it. Take what you like. Go with your budget and play with whatever degree of confidence you can, and if you have to pare it back, that's excellent advice.
Some specifics, and this is a red board free invitation. You can talk about whatever big hit that is most memorable to you and comes to mind in the Breeders' Cup, and then we can maybe look at the anatomy of why it came off.
Well, you know, that's a good question. I have to really jog my memory on that. As I've gotten older, I've been wagering less and less. So I don't really have any major plays early on. I know, you know, back in the 80s and 90s, I was, you know, we were really sending it in, so to speak. You know? my scores have been, I won't say few and far between, because I don't really bet that much anymore. I'm just trying to remember as to what major hits I've had. I can't really think of any one that, I mean, I can think of some major hits I've had that weren't in Breeders' Cup, you know, but I've made a few good hits here and there, but nothing that I would want to brag about, anything like that, simply because I don't attack it as much as I used to. When it first started, I remember in 84 and 85, didn't quite have the same kind of rolling exotic probables as we have now, or possibilities we have right now. I know Sunday Silence was a good hit for us, and one of the reasons for that was because we won the race before with Prize. So I remember that was a rather lucrative afternoon, if I can recall. But I'm not counting the money anymore. I think I've spent already.
That money's been spent, and of course you're referring to were you Clover at that point, or
yeah,
Team Valor?
Yeah, Clover. That was Clover. That was Prize in '89 in the Breeders' Cup Turf, followed by Sunday Silence, which had always been our favorite horse out here in California, leading up to his confrontation with Easy Goer in the Derby, and then down the road into the Breeders' Cup. And so that was always a horse that we followed. And I had claimed his dam, Wishing Well, $32,000 for a client when she was running. So I had actually had a very special connection with Sunday Silence because of that. But the thing is, you know, those were more of a, I enjoyed that more from a sporting standpoint than actually
sure.
a gambling standpoint.
Well, we're going to have plenty of opportunity, obviously, the next few weeks, and we'll be honing in, and you'll see Jeff's entry 2 weeks from today in the Breeders' Cup betting guide from Express Bet. He's doing the mile, I'm doing the classic, and we've got 14 different personalities that are involved, and we'll get a number of them on between now and the cup. Jeff, anything today or tomorrow? You got a little push for today?
Let's see. Well, today at Santa Anita, there's a filly in the last race that catches my eye. Her name is Heather's Gray. I don't know if she's going to be much of a prize. She's 5-2 in the morning line, but I do think that she's going to be tough in the eighth race at Santa Anita. She looks like she's improving from Mike McCarthy. I like her. Some good racing tomorrow. Keeneland is going to be interesting for me. I like a couple of horses there for those playing Keeneland in the sixth race, a maiden special weight for two-year-old fillies. There's a filly named Dianu who was very, very unlucky in her debut. Now she's in Mark Cassie's barn. I expect her to run very, very well in the sixth race, second-time starter in a maiden race that doesn't look like it's that strong. Next race, seventh race at Keeneland, there's a horse named Mustakim, a South African horse who I liked in his U.S. debut at Saratoga, and he blew the turn at Saratoga and puts blinkers on, and his South African form was very good. I think he's going to be like 8-1. I think you want to look at him, Mustakim, in the seventh at Keeneland. And then there's a very good race called the Queen Elizabeth II Challenge Cup. Obviously, Cambier Park in the ninth, that's the ninth race at Keeneland, and she's going to be the favorite for Chad Brown. But there's a filly coming in from Europe named Castle Lady, who is very, very good. She won her first three starts, won the 1,000 guineas in France, victimized in Royal Ascot in the coronation, and although she hasn't been out since June, I don't think she'd be here unless she was ready. So Castle Lady's got a very good chance to pull off a mild surprise, I thought, in the QE2. And I think that there's some good racing there. There's some excellent racing at Woodbine as well. Here at Santa Anita in New York, it's going to be fun as we kind of get geared up for Breeders' Cup.
Well, and we've hit all those highlights, and I appreciate the added Woodbine coverage. Is it me, or is there a disproportionate number of Yiddish and Hebrew named horses around, Jeff?
You're right. It's funny because I was so impressed with Larry Comas being able to refer to Di Dieno as the correct pronunciation, and I actually texted him, and he said he had gotten some help with that one when he called her and she finished third. But it's kind of fun, I don't know, it's what you bring up is correct. And you know, I kind of look at names like that. For example, I understand that the Addams Family movie is the animated movie's coming out today, and Morticia is in the ninth today.
Yes.
Might want to play her for that reason. And, well, she actually kind of figures anyway. So, but I look at kind of things like that. I mean, the degenerate horse player that I am, I don't usually pay too much attention to it, but it's fun anyway.
Well, it is funny that Di Dieno ends up being the name of that Into Mischief filly out of the very nice blind date that was campaigned by the late Bill Backer, because Bill Backer was as Goyish a cup as there is. and for this filly to end up as Di Dieno, I got a big kick out of that.
I also knew that when the way her name is spelled, there would be no chance for anybody who would know how to pronounce it.
Between her for Kingsport Farm and a lot of Al Gold's horses in New York, the Gold Square horses, you've got to know your Hebrew vowels. Jeff, thanks so much. Have a great weekend. We'll talk next week.
Sounds great. Thanks.
Jeff Siegel, everybody, and we'll stay right here for the last 20 minutes because Dave Grenig of the Daily Racing Forum is standing by.
Yes, sir.
Dave, you're technically batting cleanup or ninth, either way, depending on how you look at it. It's hard to say.
I'm usually at the bottom of the order, so I'll say it.
Well, I want to really start to make the rounds because of the coverage by the DRF correspondents for Breeders' Cup. You've got the Juvenile, and of course you had the Juvenile showcase right in front of you on Saturday. Barkley Tag was on with me yesterday. We talked about Tis the Law. Some thoughts. Let's start the Juvenile conversation with last week's result.
Well, Tis the Law was very good coming off the layoff and a little bit of an injury. Barkley had him primed to run a superior race, and then both Barkley and Jack Knowlton sort of dropped a mini bombshell afterwards and said that they were not going to go to the Breeders' Cup. They don't want to go out west for multiple reasons. And so one of the favorites for the race was withdrawn before he could even be considered one of the favorites for the race. So Tis the Law will probably run next in the Kentucky Jockey Club on November 30th at Churchill Downs on his way to Florida for the winter. And we'll see how he handles the two-turn mile on the 16th, as well as the home of the Kentucky Derby, Churchill Downs.
One of we had Barkley yesterday. We had a really fun conversation, and he actually, for those that if you haven't heard it yet, he explains what you know 2-year-old shin issues are and how they come about, how they present, and how you deal with them. Barkley was just terrific yesterday, and you know I said how prepared are you for the onslaught of funny side comparisons?
Yeah, what was his answer?
you know, he understands. He understands that there's going to be plenty. You know, he thinks this horse, and right from the get go, he I think had real expectations that this was a major talent, and it is pretty cool that they Sakatoga and Barkley come back here 15 years later and 16 years later and they've got they've got obviously one of the best males of the generation right now.
Look, he's been very impressive in his first two starts. I remember, you know, before I got to the Racing Forum, there was a horse, Pulpit, if you remember Pulpit in the mid-90s. And the Racing Forum did something called Pulpit Watch, where I believe Mike Welsh and Marty McGee on a daily basis had to pester Frank Brothers about Pulpit, you know, from every, whether he, bowel movements, to food that he ate, to, water that he liked, to mints, and so I always, when you get a horse like this, we always kid around, it's going to be Tis the Law Watch, and I think that would drive Barkley Tag just over the edge if you did Tis the Law, where Marty and Mike would have to go there every day and say, well, what did Tis the Law do today? Good thing he's at Palm Meadows, because that way, you know, he doesn't have to worry about someone going there every single day. But look, Tis the Law has been very impressive in his first two starts. I think we've seen horses do this before. I try to temper enthusiasm until we start to get it longer in distance, but you can't be unhappy if you're a Barkley fan, a Jack Knowlton fan, or a New York Bred fan, or just a fan of good horses. You can't be unhappy with what you've seen so far from this horse.
Well, combine those results and, of course, Greenlight Go, who I saw on your revised list this week, still under consideration for the juvenile.
I spoke to both Mike Doyle and Jimmy Jerkins, via text, and basically it was they wanted to see how the horse trained moving forward, and you know give it a week before they made any decisions, yay or nay. But from what I'm hearing through other channels, I think he is still pointed to that race, and why not? He didn't run a poor race in the Champagne. I mean, he ran a solid second. He was on the lead. They didn't necessarily want him on the lead, but I don't know what else you could have done with him. Let me put it this way: I don't think there's anything that would have happened with Greenlight Go's trip that would have made a difference. He was going to finish second to Tis the Law that day, no matter what kind of trip he had. So maybe you just, if you come to that realization, if you're his connections, and you realize that Tis the Law is not going to be in the juvenile, then why not take a shot? It's also owned by Stronach Stables. Stronach owns the racetrack out in California. Why not support your track and your horse and send him out there? The three major contenders right now, the three shortest prices, will be Genesis Moment for Dale Romans and the Alboss Stable, Eight Rings for Baffert and his cluster of owners there, and Maxfield, who was very visually impressive for Godolphin winning the Breeders' Shoe Charity the other day. So those would be your three top choices, and everybody else who's on our list will come in at close to double-digit odds.
Well, and it does seem, Dave, based on what you're tracking and on your revised work this week, that this is not going to be a big field. The girls' race, the juvenile fillies, looks like we talked to Jay earlier, and that seems a little bit more open. And as a result, there's a working list of 12 plus. It feels like we're not going to get more than 10 in here.
Somebody will probably show up that who's not on my radar right now. Sometimes you'll get that maiden winner in California who, might want to take a shot, or sometimes it's a maiden at all that might want to take a shot because they don't have to ship. They're right there. They think they have a good horse. I could see that happening, but I don't think it'll be a full field. Whether you can run 14, I'd be surprised if it's 14. Like I said, I have 10 on my list, to that point on Monday when we had to have this in, I had exhausted my resources. I had a few extra, Wrecking Crew, who hasn't run since he was second in what was a Del Monte Charity. was really on my others list, but I had to kind of lift him into the field because I've lost some runs. Gouverneur Morris was another one we lost, not because of injury or anything. They just decided to take a different path. That horse was second in the Breeders' Futurity. So you had the winner from the Champagne and the runner-up from the Breeders' Futurity both looking to skip the juvenile for just different reasons and no health issues, but just to point to different targets. And when you take two prospects like that out, A, it lessens the field on the surface, but it also could inspire someone who looks like a long shot to maybe jump in the fray.
Let me ask you for one update. The Three Technique, who ended up coming out of the Champagne and a lot of people were excited about. Where's he stand overall?
He had a lung infection. I would imagine if it's not too serious, he could potentially show up in the Nashua/Remsen. You know, I don't know how much time he's going to miss, but I couldn't imagine them trying to still do the juvenile off missing a key race. So, you know, to ship out, go two turns, I think that would be a bit much to ask. So I could see him, you know, if he's healthy and back going again, to maybe take a shot in the Nashua, which is the day after the juvenile. I think it's November 3rd.
What's your other race, Dave?
The Philly and Mare Turf. I think I was given that because they thought Chad Brown would have like four or five in there, and basically he's going to have one, well, two if you count Tayus.
Well, and give us a Philly and Mare Turf update.
I mean, I'm flying a little bit blind on here because I don't have as much clout with the Euros, trying to figure out which ones. You know, right now we have Starcatcher in the mix, and he's second choice on the line made by Brad Free, but I'm not 100% certain that one's running. From what I know of the American-based horses, the ones that I know for sure are supposed to run are Sister Charlie, Mississippi, Mirth, and Basilica. I'll throw Taze in there also because she is planning to be the rabbit for Sister Charlie. Basilica, we still don't have a concrete answer from the Breeders' Cup on whether Jerry Hollendorfer is going to be able to participate. I'm hearing through back channels that he's going to be. Maybe they just don't want to announce it because, hey, what if something happens to this horse? What if she gets a temperature or something, or has to miss it for whatever reason? Maybe they're looking to, they can bow out gracefully that way. They don't have to worry about King Jack because he is out of the sprint. He has an issue that's going to force him to miss that race. So if Jerry just has the one, maybe they're just sort of waiting to see what happens. But Basilica, I think, is going to be allowed to run. The Europeans, it's really just sort of a guessing game. The ones I know for sure that are supposed to run are Voracious from Michael Stout and Villa Marina, who won the Prix d'Opera the other day. And that trainer, Carlos Lafon Paris, he's pretty confident in that filly. He thinks she's an absolute mile-and-a-quarter type filly. And when you look at her record, her last four races, she's three for her last four, and they've all been at a mile-and-a-quarter, and she was beaten two lengths. And going a mile and a half. So she's listed at a big price, but she could be a dangerous filly. Iridesa for Joseph O'Brien. And then the wild card is Aiden O'Brien. We don't really know exactly what he's doing. I put in Fleeting on my list just because it made sense. I think she was second to Voracious or Villa Marina, one of those two. And I just don't know what else he's considering for this race. And who knows what happens if Enable actually shows up in the turf. Do some of the fillies and mares that were looking at the turf reroute to this race? I just don't know.
No, good questions. What about Deidre? What's her lead?
I've been dealing with Adrian Beaumont on that, and he thinks that she's more likely to run in the Champions race than the Breeders' Cup, but that's not out of the question that she does both. I think they're looking for firm ground. From what I understand from the Breeders' Cup officials is that the son of the trainer has made two visits to Stan Anita already. So I have to think I do believe they're seriously thinking about it, but I could also see them running in Champions Day also, either instead of or pre Breeders' Cup. Just have the trouble getting a hold of that group.
Well, all right. There you go. Philly and Mare Turf.
I want to give you one update that's not in my race, but Chad Brown this morning. You know, the more I talk to him, the more he keeps opening the door a little wider for Bricks and Mortar to run in the turf. He's up to 50-50 now, and I do think that's a different percentage than when he left here the other day, to go to Tattersall's to buy some horses. I think the workout last Sunday was impressive enough to him that he's starting to give more and more consideration to trying the turf. No decision has been made yet, but I think he's giving more consideration to that race. To try it at a mile and a half. off the 13-week layoff. And he did confirm that Ooney will be supplemented to the mile.
And so that would leave him, if Brixton Mortar goes turf, it would leave him with Ooney and Raging Bull in the mile.
I don't believe Raging Bull. I don't have Raging Bull on my list. And I presented him a list of horses. I had him look at it, and he basically, you know, confirmed that nine horses on my list, and one was a question mark. Wildcat is a question mark on what A, if she goes, and B, what race she would run in. And I didn't have Raging Bull on my list, and he didn't say, "Hey, you forgot Raging Bull." So I'm not sure Raging Bull's going to the mile.
Guarana turning back in the Filly and Mare Sprint.
Guarana is turning back in the Filly and Mare Sprint. Dunbar Road to Distaff.
There we go. All right, good. So we got a little chat update in there as well. Dave, a couple of other highlights. Arklow's win in the Joe Hirsch. That oddly run edition of the Flower Bowl, very impressive. I thought Wicked Whisper certainly scored out, got a big fig. We're going to talk to Alex Lieblong next week. He and Joanne are very excited. Neptune Storm, I don't think, has gotten enough notice for that performance in the Hill Prince, coming into town and stealing the money.
Yeah, smart, good choice of race by trainer Richard Baltus to ship cross country to pick off a $400,000 pot. You know, there aren't too many of those around left for the three-year-old male turf division. Very nice ride there, good trip. Stalked Thread of Blue all the way and overtook that one. And I think he's going to the Hollywood Derby next. I had Steve Anderson sort of do my legwork on that one. So he'll get a nice, he'll get some spacing to that race. And, it was a good performance and, probably a horse that we need to keep our eyes on, going forward into 2020. Sister Charlie does what Sister Charlie does. And, Belmont is not a course that she's necessarily shown a great affinity for. She's her only two losses, although I would argue that the best race I've seen her run was when she lost to Four-Star Crook in the New York Stakes. But, she's probably just as solid on a tighter turn course than she is, maybe better on a tighter turn course than she is at Belmont, but she's still just a superior filly. And that's a Hall of Fame horse right there, Sister Charlie. She does get help from Tayus, and look, I don't begrudge anyone who runs a rabbit in a race. My only thing is, if I were the Breeders' Cup, and I know they won't do it, but if I were them, I would couple the two in the wagering, but that's a story for another day. Mississippi ran a solid race, solid second, an improving filly. I just don't know that she was ever going to really beat Sister Charlie, and I think on a firmer ground, I think Sister Charlie's even a little bit better. So I think, you could correct me if I'm wrong, I haven't done all the work and all the numbers on it. She might be the shortest, if the races sort of stay as we have them, I would think that she'd be the shortest priced favorite on the card, with maybe the potentially Midnight Bizou, depending on who shows up in the Distaff.
Very nice. And regarding the weekend, also, Dave, got a very nice, I thought the Sands Point, it looked competitive, group of seven, and the group of eight in the Floral Park. Any thoughts?
Yeah, these are two very competitive races that just, you look at them as races. You don't have to look at them as any kind of prep for anything. But the horse of the two races that interests me the most because of the price is in the Floral Park. So that's the seventh race, number three, Fear No Evil. I love the rider change to Joel Rosario. On a turf sprint, Rosario just rides lights out in New York in those turf sprints. I think the filly's had, this mare has had a bunch of troubled trips, especially at Laurel, which has not been her cup of tea. She's run well, not necessarily won a lot at Belmont, but I love Rosario on this filly. I think there's some speed in here to help set up her late kick. And I know Goldwood is a very nice filly. She's won five in a row, but I, at a price, I like Fear No Evil. And I wouldn't be stunned if Albertrani is able to sweep both stakes, because I think Dynapasser is a nice filly as well in what I think is a really wide-open race. I think if any of the seven won the Sands Point, I would not be surprised. There's not one horse. Maybe Ledecca, because her numbers look light, but she did win at the mile and eighth already on the grass, and that's her calling card. But any of the seven, I think, could win that race. I kind of leaned a little bit toward Field Glorious, just because I think she's too full of good luck and a trip, and I think the mile and eighth might be better suited to her than maybe some of the other ones are cutting back, and maybe they want the longer race, whereas Field Glorious is stretching out a little bit, and I think she does want the mile and eighth.
Speaking of Tom Albertrani, by the way, who has become just an outstanding turf trainer, and of course he did come up under Bill Mott, he's got a sneaky horse in the shaping up toward the Breeders' Cup Turf Sprint, that final frontier. Not a horse to sleep on.
No, I just think that, you know, down the hill, if that race was down the hill like it used to be or should be, I'd like their chances a lot better than...
I hear you.
I like Seki Shabazz to reverse the thing at five. If it wasn't five, I'd agree with you. But it's, at five, I think it's up against, he's up against it.
Is Seki going?
Yeah.
Wow. How about that? Okay. All right. That's another little tidbit. Nice weekend of racing. They're going to draw the Monday, Columbus Day. How are you going to go to the Columbus Day Parade, Dave?
Can't make the Columbus Day Parade, but here, here's a little late info on that race, too. The sole Catholic boy has been entered for the Knickerbocker.
Woo, look at you.
Just full of news for you, my man. Just full of news.
Juicy! Well, I've got something for you. Ashar is a three-quarter brother to Mendip, running in the eighth race tomorrow for Shadwell.
You trumped me again.
No, I don't think so. it did catch my eye, and I wanted to get it in. Dave, this was great. If we run Monday, I'll see you then.
You got it.
Dave Grenig, everybody. DRF Grenig closing out the superfecta of DRF Grenig, Gernick, Gierkink, Privman, and McGee, as well, of course, as Tom Robbins. Thanks to Tom for visiting to pay tribute to Sherwood Chili Chillingworth, Hammer, Jeff Siegel, Scully. We never found Ed today. There it is. That's a lot of entertainment. Have a great weekend, everybody. I'm seeing Trampled by Turtles tonight with Tina. Here they are.